Good evening, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. We are in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5. We're looking at the Ten Commandments. Updated schedule for the end till the end of the year is on your desk or table. Next week is the church conference. The week after that is Thanksgiving, so no class either one of those. And then there's a couple, and then a bunch of Christmas stuff. So we will try to finish the Ten Commandments, but not much more before the end of the year. And then somebody's going to have to sit down and rework that whole schedule to finish this sometime in 2020. Otherwise, it will not go well. We are in the Ten Commandments. What was the first commandment? This, you should know this. What is that? I hear mumbling, that's all. What is it? What is the first commandment? We're looking at the Ten Commandments. We shall have no other gods before me. And then the second commandment? No idols. So we're going to worship the one God, the only God, and we're going to worship Him in spirit and in truth. And the third commandment? Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord. Now, are you reading that off of Then how come you have to read them? You should know them. Yeah. That was back then, and now is now. So what was the third commandment? That was the second one. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. And we are called by the name of the one whose name is above every name. The fourth commandment? Remember the Sabbath, or observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's the one that we spent more time than any other discussing. So we're not going to review. we're going to move on. But I will rest in the one who invites me into his rest. It's his rest, and he invites us in to take it. We looked briefly at different types of law, the moral law that doesn't change, ceremonial law fulfilled in Christ, the laws for the nation, but not necessarily all nations, and laws that set apart the people of God to be a distinct people, broken down in Christ, as Pastor Sean has been preaching through Galatians. Oh, I gave you the answer. So, fifth commandment. Honor your father and mother as the Lord your God can. It's what? Yeah, this is the first one with a promise that your days may be long and it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And we saw that we can't honor the one to whom all honor is due if we don't honor those to whom some honor is due. And my generation did not understand this truth. And we pay the price for it. So any things that came to mind during the week on any of the first... We did number six, too. What was number six? You shall not murder. God is the life giver, and therefore we're called to promote life, not death. So anything that came to mind over the week on any of these, or we'll move on to the next one. All right, number seven. What's seventh commandment? You shall not commit adultery. If you had to look at our society and you had to rate these commandments as which are most important for a society, where would this one fall? It should be high, but what is it in our society? This is old fashioned and out of date, right? Because it's not that big a deal. And it doesn't matter if I make someone else unhappy or not. So you shall not commit adultery. And we've looked before at these moral laws. They are duties to God and they are duties to people. It's not a case of some of them are directed towards the Lord and some of them are directed towards other people. That when we fulfill these laws, it is part of our worship, of our praise to God, is to follow the laws that He has laid down. It's also the best thing for us as people. Somebody said we don't break the law. The law breaks us. When we violate the law, we suffer the consequences, and we might not realize what the consequences are right away. Right? We have the pleasure, but the consequences sometimes come later. I told the example I read somewhere of that these laws are made for freedom. They're not made for enslaving people. That living the life that God created us for is freedom. It is not slavery. And yet in our society, the thinking is, if you tell me not to do this, well, that infringes on my freedom, but it's not so. So the essence here is sexual relations with someone else's wife. Now, there are a whole lot of other sexual sins in the Bible that this would include, but the very basic thing is directed towards men not to have relations with someone else's wife. And I told you I've been reading a lot of the so-called new atheists, and one of the books I've been reading is by a feminist that just thinks everything in the Christian faith in the Bible is so horrendous towards women. But here's a case where the command, the word for adultery is typically used for men. Is this demeaning to women? Yeah. It's what?
It would be the reverse. It would be honoring and respecting.
Yeah, if it's going to, if it's demeaning anyone, it's demeaning who? The men. Right? I mean, it singles them out. Now, the fact is, men and women both can have sexual immorality, but the basic is for men. And so here, you shall not commit adultery in the nation of Israel. This was a capital offense. That's how important it was. And why would it be a capital offense to violate this in a society? What is the value in that? How so? How?
It just tears everything up. The whole society.
This was a family structure.
With a whole, everybody is hurt.
And what was that?
Destroys the family structure.
Right. If you destroy the family, you destroy the nation. If you destroy the family, you destroy the church. Aaron, was that a hand waving, or are you just saying hello? Oh, okay. I didn't want to snub you. Yeah. So this is fundamental. So here, and we'll see this more in some of the other laws in Deuteronomy. The idea was a holy nation set apart from the other nations, and surviving and living well. And so this violates that and destroys the nation. Now, in our nation, it's not seen as a big thing, but you can see the repercussions throughout all of society. Yeah. The interesting thing is, and we'll see this later in Deuteronomy, trust me, that there are laws for the kings, and it specifically says, do not amass for yourselves chariots, horses, gold, or wives. That from the beginning, it was one man, one woman. But because of the fallen nature of man, we don't pay attention. And the principle is there, the law is there, but it was not enforced 100% in certain circumstances. So, but you cannot find, well, somebody correct me, I cannot find a single example in the Bible where polygamy or concubines ended up being a blessing, right? It was always a turmoil. Although God used that, because right, the nation of Israel itself, there's 12 sons, right? But they didn't all come from the same mother. So here you have a society that has its own way of producing, reproducing, and God uses that for his own purpose, but that was not the original intent. And I think it falls in the category of, you know, they criticize Jesus, they ask him, you know, how do you interpret this law? Well, why did Moses say this? And he said, Moses said that because of the hardness of your heart, but from the beginning, it was not so. And if we looked at the beginning and more clearly in the New Testament, there was a, I don't know what the word is, I was going to say grace period, right, of not immediate judgment for violating that commandment. But anybody else, you have a reason why it seems acceptable in for our times when it really is wrong.
my devotions are, I'm going through Kings, 2 Kings. And you read about some rotten kings. And it was corruption because they had pagan wives. And they took up the pagan ways over and over and over again.
Yep.
And, you know, there are consequences. You know, it does happen. They're either good or bad. There will be consequences. And there were consequences for a lot of this. But it's just, it was the culture was just so satisfied with letting them do what they wanted to do.
Yep.
So the way that the famous kings that were so wicked.
So the bottom line is, people are wicked. That's why.
There's no more. I mean, there's no boundaries. You know, these kings, they weren't. I mean, some of them were, but a lot of them were, did their own thing. The God is what God said, and the prophet said, they just did it.
Right.
And they had to pay for it eventually, one way or the other.
Ron?
Maybe society allowed it because of all the thousands of men being killed in battle.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, for the kings, it's a sign of wealth. And many wives were political alliances. But then there's also there was a duty to have children. The family was everything, right? And so, you know, especially from, they found a ton of documents in Nuzi, which is close to where Abraham came from. And they have a lot of laws in there that you see in Abraham's life. But one of them was, if a wife doesn't produce a son for the husband, then she shall give the handmaiden to the husband to raise up a child. And that's exactly what you see in Abraham's life. So some of it is not necessarily just lust, but the desire for children. Yeah, Ike?
The way the economy is going, you often see somebody pushing it again. Well, the United States birth rate is going down.
Yeah.
There's not enough people to pay taxes.
But I don't know if more wives would solve that.
I have a question about, I just would like you to explain why you say that this commandment from God was for men.
Just because the way the word is used, it's always in that context in the Hebrew Bible. That's the essence. I mean, there are other words for promiscuity and fornication, but this one seems to be limited to men. I mean, the woman is...
The word adultery only applies to men.
In that context. Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean the other things are right, and it doesn't mean that only one person is guilty. But there's an aspect of there's a difference between in the Bible of sexual immorality outside of marriage to unmarried people. That's different than sexual relations with someone else's wife, and that this is the basis of the commandment. Now, as with all the other commandments, what we'll find is that it lays down a foundation that is expanded through the rest of the Bible to include both positive and negative aspects. But let me ask you. I cannot love the ever faithful one if my life is controlled by selfish lust. Every one of these commandments that we've seen reveals something about the nature and character of God. So What is it about this that what is revealed about the nature of the Creator God in this commandment? He's a jealous God, and what does that mean? Because that offends some people today. It was what? It's exclusive. Yeah. Jealousy, I mean, when we think of jealousy, we often think of the most immature jealousy for what somebody else has. But jealousy, when it talks about God as the jealous God, is jealousy to preserve something that is valuable. And the marriage relationship is valuable and is safeguarded. And it's the proper thing to be jealous when someone interferes with that relationship. So what does it tell you? He's a jealous God, and he's also what?
Faithful.
He's what?
Faithful.
He's the faithful God. He's faithful. The essence of marriage is faithfulness for one person. And this is exactly who God is. And we reveal the nature of God when we're faithful in our covenants as he's faithful in his covenant. Now, this, I mean, some of this will be a shock in our society. God himself created gender. He made man or human beings what? Male and female. I was really surprised, but, you know, I work remotely, and it's medical stuff. But we have a group chat. And so anybody, you know, we talk through the chat, and people ask technical questions, but other times they just chat, like the water cooler. And so one of our colleagues that works on at Stanford University, the hospital of Stanford, which is, you know, a big deal, he opens up the chat and he says, so Stanford's asking me, how do we add another sex? Because all we have is male, female, and other. So how do I add another one? And so we said, well, you can't. That's all there is, male, female, and other. And he says, well, so that, of course, started a big, long thing of people saying, you know, if they don't know if they're male or female, then they just have to accept their other. He said, well, Stanford wants non-binary. And so one of the colleagues says, well, I hate to tell them, if they don't know the difference, then they have to take up. And so this other fellow, he says, well, that's offensive. and so my other colleague says, I know he's sarcastic because I know him. And he says, well, I just want to express my sincere apologies if I've offended anybody. And, you know, and everybody thinks this is funny, but the one guy says, oh, no, it's okay, you didn't offend me, but my family would be offended. And so all of a sudden now it's turning into a big mess. But how far does a society have to drift from God to not know the difference between male and female as though it's a choice? I mean, this really, when you think of it, this is the creature exalting itself over the Creator. The Creator made it this way, but I know better, and I don't like it that way, so I'll do it the way I want to do it. This is frightening when you have a politician, you know, in a debate, will say, you know, I'm so-and-so, my pronouns are her, she, because you have to tell somebody now what your pronoun is, or you get offended if they call you a she when you don't want to be called a she. And we have a creator, and he created human beings, male and female, he created them. And that's it. And because of that, he created marriage. He has an institution for the relationship between male and female and the propagation of the race in marriage. And he's the creator of sex. He creates sex, and therefore he has the right to determine what is right and what is wrong. That the law that we have here is not Moses' thinking of a good idea. This is the revelation of the Creator God, what is good and what is bad. And it's our society that destroys itself by rejecting what he has said. And at the bottom line is, as you've already said, is covenant faithfulness. That's the essence of who God is faithful in keeping covenants and faithful in relationship. I mean, one of the things about the Lord is the essence of the Trinity is that you have relationship from all eternity, and faithful relationship in one God, and that's how he created men. So let me ask you, where was the first miracle of Jesus performed? Where? Yeah, Cana, the village of Cana, and it was at what event? A what? At a wedding. At a wedding. That the first sign he does is at a wedding. In the book of Revelation, John sees the New Jerusalem, the city coming down out of heaven to earth. How is that city described? As what? As a bride adorned for her husband. And finally, the final invitation in Revelation is given by who? The Spirit and the bride say, come. So you can go from Genesis, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and will cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. From Genesis through to Revelation, that you have an emphasis on marriage and on marriage relationships, and that God himself, he is not just the king, but he's the husband of his people. You see this through Israel is the bride of Yahweh, all the way through to the bridegroom Christ, who comes and he draws his people to himself. So how do you apply this for our own lives? It's one thing, society is terrible, but what does this say to us as his people? We should be faithful to him and to what? And to each other. Anything else?
Major part of witness,
How is it part of our witness?
Because we're to be abandoned for the public. Until death do us.
What else? How does this affect the way we live day to day? No, just this one. or the whole Ten Commandments, sure.
It's a basic society.
It's the standard that God has set for us that's for our own good. And if we don't, then we are not helping ourselves if we don't follow.
Yeah.
All of these commandments, we for our own good, we need to follow them. A lack of commitment, I think, is boiled down to a lot of things that are going on in our society today. It's just, when you're committed to someone, you're committed to them. It's not wash your hands and go somewhere else and, you know, whatever. And we see it all the time. There's no commitment anymore. And sadly, in a lot of places.
And yeah.
It's not getting any better.
Anybody know Dave Reaver? Alden? Who was Dave Reaver?
Dave Reaver was in the military in Vietnam, had a terrible injury, and should have died. And God kept him alive, and his wife should have left him because he saw many soldiers whose wives left because his face was burned terrible. Just couldn't recognize. But I remember that he thought sure she was going to leave.
Yeah.
And had no hope. He was depressed. He was in a bad way. But she came in and saw him in the hospital.
And you can look up his story on YouTube, but he said, I mean, he was throwing an incendiary grenade and a sniper hit his hand, so it burned his face and his. I mean, he makes jokes now. He plays the music by ear because he can take it off. And I mean, but he said he's in the ICU and there's like a dozen men there, and none of them lived except him. And I wonder if it wasn't because of his wife. He said, you know, this fellow next to him, his wife came in and took the marriage ring off and threw it on the bed, said, that's it. And he loses all hope. And his wife came in and said, you know, said to the doctor, that's not my husband. And the doctor said, yeah, it is. And she looked at him and recognized him through the one good eye and said, welcome home, Davy. I love you. And that says it's like that's the heart of this commandment is not just sex. It's a faithful commitment and love for another person. And even if we're single or in a time of singleness, we can have that same commitment to people, to give them the love that sustains them. Judy?
Well, a person is more than what their face shows. A person is the essence that they give off by the way they treat other people and by the way, I mean, there's just more to somebody than being handsome or beautiful.
Yeah. Don't I know? R-O-E-V-E-R, possibly. But there's a ton of YouTube. I mean, he has a ministry, and he actually works for the military now. Going, he says, you know, every day there's a certain number of veterans that commit suicide, and he goes and ministers. He says, hey, You know what? I wrestled with suicide for years. And yet God preserved me to minister to you. But the thing that struck me, and the reason I was thinking of that, was I doubt if he would have survived if his wife hadn't remained faithful to him. Somebody else was saying something. Yeah, I'll... Oh.
And it's definitely the most beautiful and better communication I've ever heard.
Yep.
And if you want to hear it, you can hear it.
You can hear it. And it's well worth it. You might have to listen to an hour before you hear the one about the wife, but the other stuff is good too. It's a good thing. So what then is the essence of marriage? It's covenant, it's union, it's male and female, it's exclusive, it's enduring, and it's a picture of Christ and his bride. That's why I was asking, when you said it's a part of our witness, the Christian marriage exemplifies Christ and his bride. This is what Ephesians tells us. And that's why God preserves it, keeps it, safeguards it. That when we have strong communion and love in a church and in relationships and in marriages, that lifts up Jesus and reveals him. Now, what did Jesus say about this commandment? Do you remember? You've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you, if what?
If you look at
a woman to lust after her, what? You have already committed adultery in your heart. And this is, those are ogle eyes, you know. The original Greek, that's what it meant. But so Jesus, with all the commandments the same way, he intensifies them, he expands them, and he leaves us no room. There's no wiggle room. There's no escape. And so from adultery to all sexual sin, but he's not just concerned about the body. He's concerned about the eye, the heart, the desire, the speech. Some of those, remember, in for Sunday sermon, the list of the works of the flesh. It's not just bodily things, but it's coarseness, it's vulgarity. All of these are included in this commandment. So Job said, "I've made a covenant with my eyes; I will not look at a young woman. I've made a covenant with my eyes." What does our society? I mean, what does that remind you of in our society? I would say, you know, our society is the opposite of this. There's a whole industry devoted to men's eyes. Right? And it is not just outside the church. There's rampant enslavement to pornography in our society. And I mean, this is direct violation of what Jesus said. And he's calling us to an integrity of the heart, a desire to please him in every way. Again, you know, I came of age in the 60s, and we were told that, you know, the reason people have sexual problems is because we don't talk about it enough. Well, now we do. And what do you know? We still have sexual problems. In fact, they're more so. Exactly. But that's what they said. And, you know, C.S. Lewis, it's really quite good, but he talks about, you know, what if you came to a society where they treated food like pornography does sex? You know, it's like, oh, there's banana, there's fruit, you know, and people are spending their money to get pictures of it and looking at it and finding the internet to look at food. You would say, there's something sick in that society. Sex is the same way. That there's something sick when it overwhelms our life, our thought, our mind, the way we live. There's something broken in humanity. And this law cannot change us. Right? It can reveal who God is and what's best for us, but it can't change the heart. What changes the heart? What sets people free from immorality in this or any other command? What sets people free? Not so. Well, maybe when... What sets people free now, before they die?
When you live for Christ.
Yeah.
The way he wants us to.
The Spirit of God changes people's lives. And so this law reveals who God is, reveals who I am, and it points me to the only one that can change me, and that's Christ. And when we're pointed to him and his Spirit is in us, he sets people free. And that doesn't mean that it's easy to retrain the mind and the heart, but it cannot be done apart from his grace and his Spirit. Mike? Yeah, but there's a different, you know, Martin Luther said, you know, there's a difference between a bird landing on your head and building a nest to live there. And the difference, you know, the same thing with a thought. You might have a thought and a desire, but that's different from relishing it and enhancing it and mulling it over and growing in it and putting it into practice, right? And that, there is a difference when the Spirit of God comes. Doesn't mean there's never any, you know, I don't believe in sinless perfection in this life either, but I do believe in victory over habits and bondage that we've had maybe for years. Aaron, was it?
The Matthew verse that Jesus talked about, you know, even if you love this, you commit sin. So obviously he's saying it's not just your behavior, it's what's in your heart.
Yes.
So obviously Jesus, his power is what sets us free from sin and ongoing sorrowful life. So the Old Testament Was there any hope for those people? I mean, was it just a behavioral change for everybody? Was it just behavioral psychology? I mean, was that just a be good or you're going to... And I understand the whole, okay, we sinned today, we have to now slaughter 10 cows. But, I mean, was there literally like a, there was no ever change inside of them? I mean, the 10 commandments was to show them, obviously, but then the 10 commandments, what, went to 690 laws, which then went to, what, 900 and something laws? So, was there ever like a, I mean, obviously, David was the only one that it seems like there was like a change in his heart. There was like a heart. I'm just saying, it seems like there was not a lot of hope for the Old Testament people.
Thank you for your question. I've been waiting since September for somebody to ask that.
Old Testament differences, you know?
Well, the thing is, what we'll see in the second half of chapter 5, once we get through the Ten Commandments, that God said, this is what I desire, that you fear me always, that you walk in my ways, that you follow me, and you obey me. There was always a remnant by faith in Israel that the Spirit of God changed them. You cannot read the Psalms without recognizing that these are penned by people that had a genuine love for God and a walk with Him. And the thing about the nation of Israel is you have a visible nation with laws, but within that nation there were people that had a spiritual experience, and I would argue that they were regenerated. They were born again by the Spirit of God, because you can't love God's law the way they love it without having a change. And so there are people that are faithful to God in the Old Testament. There's an intensification once Christ has come and the Spirit comes in a fuller way. But you read those prophets, they know God. They know Him, and they walk with Him and they obey Him. So yeah, I think the people of Israel would hear these laws. Some of them would reach out in faith to the God of gods and be transformed. And others, it's just a physical thing. And we'll go into that in more detail as we go through the book. But yeah, sometimes we think of it as they have no spirit and it's all external. And we have, you know, all spirit and it's all internal. But I don't think that that's true. You have, we saw in chapter 4, Caleb had a different spirit than the other spies that went into Israel. David, a man after my heart. Even though he sinned, he's a man after my heart. That his priority is God. And you cannot have that priority without the Spirit of God at work. So,
and there's Job right there.
There's Job right there.
But I thought of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Nehemiah.
Yeah.
There are examples of people who were faithful.
Yes. And God always has a people. He always has a people. And those people have to be motivated by the Spirit. Right? That, you know, that the very sorrow that David felt, I mean, as gravely as his sins, his sorrow is, God, against you and against you only have I sinned. I wish I could cleanse myself with hyssop, but I can't. But if your Spirit comes and changes the heart, then I'll unite my heart to fear your name. And that's what the people of God, the true people of God, always have been touched by the Spirit. Is that close enough for now?
yeah, I haven't studied the whole Old Testament. So
yeah. Well, you're in the right place, because we'll be here for a while. No.
The Old Testament is about it, but the New Testament is the new covenant.
Yes.
Was Jesus Christ. Nobody could get any peace. They knew something was missing.
Yep.
Nobody could have any peace until Jesus Christ came with grace. If you can get your mind wrapped around grace, you can have some peace.
Yeah.
But until you do that, you don't have it. You've got to accept Jesus Christ for what he did.
Yeah.
And that's the new covenant. Complete.
Yeah.
He didn't have it back then. He tried to show them people that they could not live like that, but they wanted a king, they wanted this, that, and the other, but they couldn't get peace.
But some of them, we saw this in Hebrews, right? That there was a great cloud of witnesses. Those that had faith in the old, pointing us to have the same kind of faith in Christ. They didn't look back at what he had done, but they looked forward to what he had done. And when you look forward to Christ, old or new, by faith, you're going to change. You're going to change. Alden?
I remember that verse. It says, "Of abound grace in the eyes."
Yeah. Yeah. There's always a remnant by grace. And now the experience we have is a higher privilege than they ever had. But that just causes me shame. I say, okay, if we have more of the Spirit available to us than they had, then why isn't my life better than Daniel's? Right? Or, you know, the three Hebrew young men, or David, or any one of those heroes of faith had more than I have, and I should have more. Alden? Yeah, he walked with God. So, you know, one way of looking at it is that there is like an absolute difference between old and new. The other is that there's a continuation and an intensification between old and new, and that's the way I look at it. So that you have this, you shall not commit adultery, come to the New Testament, Jesus says, but I'm telling you, and he intensifies it and enhances it. By the same token, the walk that was available to live for God was available to them. And it's intensified and enhanced for us. And, you know, woe to us if we don't take advantage of what he's given to us in Christ and in the Spirit.
No limit to it. You set your limits.
Yeah.
To what you can do.
Yep. And that's.
You've got to accept.
And I think that's the value of these commandments. Because if I look at it aright, it challenges me not to accept what everybody else accepts and even what I'm used to. It challenges me to say, I need something. Far more. I need something to happen in my mind, my eyes, my heart, my will, my desire. It has to change. And if it doesn't change, then I'm no better than any one of these Israelites. We're going to... All of them do not just require not doing something. All the commandments require doing something. And so refraining from adultery is not enough. The requirement is the purity of mind, heart, and desire in Christ. It's the sacrificial love that Jesus gave to us is, you know, we started with command primarily to husbands. We come to the New Testament. What does Paul say? Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. Singled out for the command, singled out again for the grace to do what Christ did. And the same is true of women, but I think in this day our society is missing men. I mean, how many times you see football players, they score the touchdown and what do they say? Hi, Mom. None of them say, hey, hi, Dad, aren't you proud of me? Because they're missing. Whole families are missing because they're not faithful in a covenant way. And this commandment reveals all of that. That it's a covenant relationship that gives children a secure place to grow and become adults. And if we don't maintain the marriage relationship, we can't maintain the family at all. And it goes back to what Alden has said, that our witness is to reveal Christ. And Christ is revealed in his love for his bride, and we reveal him when we love one another the way he wants us to love. And he does it in a sacrificial way. Anything else, or we'll close in prayer or a song. So I have to apologize to anybody that knows how to spell for this song. Because I picked the music because I thought it would be easy to sing to, but whoever put the words up there really, really needs some help. So just forgive me, sing along, and just...